everybody. Thank you for being on this call. I take it everybody here is a parent or a parent-to-be. Welcome. I thank you very much for being on this call, and I promise you, this is going to be a very interesting call. I'm a parent myself. I have four children. I'm like the philosopher who said, before I had any children, I had four philosophies about raising children. Now I have four children and no philosophies. And if you're a parent, you're in the very same situation I was. Becoming a parent is one of the most remarkable things in the world. It's one of those irrevocable conclusions that once you get into, you're into for 20 years, and actually you're into it for the rest of your life. So it's the most important thing that you ever do, and doing it well is probably the most important accomplishment of your life. In fact, the biggest regrets that parents have later on in life was they didn't spend enough time with their children, and they didn't feel that they were good enough parents. So our job is to give you the tools that you need to be an absolutely outstanding parent, and the true measure of how good a parent you are, of course, is how well your children turn out. So here are the goals of the program. Number one is to become excellent parents. Now, wonderfully enough, or sadly enough, none of us is born with any parenting skills. We know an awful lot about being parents because we have been children of our parents, and we have an awful lot to say about that, often for the rest of our lives. But becoming an excellent parent is actually a skill like learning how to ride a bicycle. It's like learning how to develop a new skill or ability, and it is ultimately learnable. When Barbara and I first decided to have children, the first thing we did was we went out and we got as many different books and tapes and courses on child raising as possible. We went to courses together, we listened to audio programs, we read books, we subscribed to newsletters, and it's absolutely amazing. You know, all the heavy lifting has been done. There's so much good information on how to raise children. It was absolutely overwhelming to us. For example, when you have your first child, you're in a state of both fatigue and confusion for a long time, and then you start to read the books, baby's first month of life, baby's first 2 months of life, 3 months of life, 6 months, first year, second year, third year, and you find that what your infants and your children are going through is very consistent. And it's very consistent all the way up into their teens. When you read the descriptions of what is going on, you say, well, these people must have been interviewing my child or observing me raising my child. So it's all the same. So you can learn an enormous amount. The parents that have the most problems that I've seen are the ones that don't learn. They have this idea, well, it just comes naturally, or my mother will tell me what to do and so on, or I'll just figure it out. No. You can save yourself an enormous amount of anguish. Let me give you just a simple example. When we had our first child, the child cries at night. Did you notice that? They cry at night, and you jump up. Oh, my God, SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. So you run to the child, and then you pick up the child, and you hold the child, and you walk the child back and forth, and finally the child goes off to sleep, and then you're just about to sleep, and the child squeaks again. Oh, my God, you run down, and you pick them up and walk them around. By the end of the night, you're both exhausted, and this goes on and on and on. And we had this situation that I spoke to an experienced parent, and we're jumping up, we're staying at their house, and she said, no, let the child cry. I said, pardon me? Let the child cry. That's how children get rid of their tension. They cry, then they fall asleep again. She said, no, you can't be true. Yes, it is. Just let the child cry. So she cried. Christina cried a little bit and went off to sleep. And we're sitting there, oh my God, we're exhausted. And it was just one little bit of advice from a parent. Let the child cry. No, let the child cry for hours, but let the child cry, because when they squeak and cry and make noises when they're young, they're just kind of getting the bugs out of their system. They're kind of stretching emotionally, and then they fall asleep. So we'll show you some of the key skills to become excellent parents. As a result of becoming an excellent parent, our second goal is to help you raise happy, healthy children. I think there's probably no greater joy in life than to have happy, healthy children. And wonderfully enough, there are an enormous number of things that you can do to assure that your children grow up happy and healthy. And we'll talk about those as we go along. The third is to raise children with high levels of self-esteem and self-confidence. In my Phoenix seminar, my multi-day Phoenix seminar, we have a session on parenting. And we talk about that, and we say that the biggest responsibility, the most important thing you do in your life, is to raise your children with high levels of self-esteem and self-confidence. If you do that, it doesn't matter whether you have a little money or a lot. It doesn't matter if you get them into Harvard or into community college. None of those things matter, because if you raise your children with high levels of self-esteem, so they really like and respect themselves and feel happy about themselves, and they have high levels of self-confidence, and they're willing to try different things and make mistakes and fall on their face and keep on going, if you raise your children with that, then you've done a great job. And if you accomplish everything else in life, but your children leave you and they're lacking self-esteem and lacking self-confidence, and they're playing catch-up ball emotionally for the next two or three decades of their adult life, then to that degree we fail. Now, the fourth goal of this program is to raise children who grow up capable and competent and able to create a wonderful life for themselves. You know, there's nothing that gives us a greater thrill or excitement as parents. It's called a vicarious thrill when we stand back and we watch our children doing well as adults. There's nothing more wonderful than for a child at any age to know that their parents really want them to do well. One of the most important things that we do as a parent and that I do as much as I can is whenever my children are in anything at school, at any age, I'll crawl over broken glass to be there. I'll fly back from the other end of the country. I'll fly overnight if necessary so that I can physically be there in the audience, even if my child only has a 5 or 10 second walk-on part. Because kids will never say this, but there's something so extraordinary for them to know that their parents are out there smiling and cheering for them. It's absolutely wonderful. One of the great joys that people in show business get is the applause of the audience. Well, the most important audience in a child's life is the audience of their parents. So it doesn't seem like much. It seems like there's lots of kids. It seems like they ignore you, which they do. They talk to their friends and so on. But in their heart of hearts, the most wonderful thing in the world is to know that their parent was there in the audience. There's a great story, by the way, of this fellow who is on the high school football team, and he never does particularly well, and he's on the bench most of the time and doesn't get to play in the major games, and when he does play, he's not that good, and he's kind of ignored as a sort of a second-rate player. And one day he comes to the coach, and he says, "Coach, I got to play today." He said, "I got to play today." The coach says, "Well, you know, we'll see if we get you a place." No, he says, I got to play, please. He says, "I've never asked you for anything. I've come to every practice. I know I haven't been good." He said, "Please, please let me play today." And the coach said, "All right, I'll let you play for a few minutes once we get started, because there's no great loss if you do poorly." And he put him in the game, and this kid came alive. He was electricity. He was knocking people down. He was grabbing fumbles. He was running with the ball, making touchdowns. He was absolutely astonishing. And they said to him at the end of the game, they won the game. This guy was voted the most valuable player. And the coach said to him, "Son," he said, "Son, what has happened to you? Seen you all season, you've done nothing." He said, "Well, you have to understand, coach," he said, "my father was blind and he died yesterday, and I know he went to heaven, and this is the first time he ever saw me play." So when your children seen you out there watching them play has a wonderful effect on their lives, and at last, in terms of raising them, happy, healthy, self-confident, and everything else. All right, the fifth goal of this program is to learn how to raise children who are popular among their friends and with members of the opposite sex. There's nothing more important in the whole world than for a child to be liked by their peers, to be popular with their peers, for their peers to like them and to want to be around them, and especially when they start to become old enough to be liked and respected by members of the opposite sex. And you know, the interesting thing is this, is it's not being beautiful or handsome that is important. It's children are attracted to other children because of the quality of their personalities. If you remember when you and I were going to school, sometimes the most popular people were the most ordinary people. But everybody wanted them on their team. Everybody wanted to play with them. Everybody wanted to have them come over to their house or come to their parties and so on. And what we found is this, is the more a child likes and respects themselves, the more they like and respect others, and the more others like and respect them and want to be around them. And the most wonderful thing is it's a direct lifeline from you to the child to the people in their world. Is the more you like and respect your child, the more your child, at any age, likes and respects you, and likes and respects themselves, and likes and respects others. So it's really, really important. And you can tell, I grew up in a family that I'll talk to you about later, but nobody ever wanted to come to my house. Nobody ever wanted to come to my property. I was the most unpopular kid in the neighborhood. And my wife was the same thing. Their family was a huge family, didn't have very much money. They were laughed at by their neighbors and so on because they were poor. So when we grew up, one of the things that we wanted more than anything else when we had children is for them to be popular. We wanted other kids to want to play with our kids. And now, sometimes, our kids will have 3 or 4 other kids each. We have 4 children. Our 3 older children will have 3 or 4 other kids each staying the night. On a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, the house is full of kids. And one of the ways that we assure that this happens is, first of all, of course, we take good care of our children. We treat them well, but we always treat their friends well. We always talk to them with respect. We always learn their names and shake hands with them and remember their names. And we always smile at them. And we always treat them like they're important little adults. And kids just love to be around our house because of the way they're treated. The other parents get kind of jealous. They say, "Well, how come you kids don't want to stay at our house. Well, that's why. Because when they come to our house, we have lots of control, lots of guidelines, but they're always very polite, and they're always treated like they're valuable and important. And it's like attracting bees to honey. The kids just love to be around my kids and come to our house. So that's one of our goals as well, is to make sure that our kids grow up and they're popular. Now, by the way, with regard to members of the opposite sex, this is a huge subject. But the bottom line is this, is that little girls form relationships with boys and men when they grow up that are very much an extension of their relationships with their father. And if their father loves them and cares about them, and they've done hundreds of studies on this, they find that the key to a little girl growing up happy and healthy as an adult female is that she knows that her father loves her and cares about her. And the father can be outspoken or introverted. The father can be gruff or effusive. The father can be warm or withholding. It doesn't matter what the personality of the father. In other words, you don't have to be a different person than who you are. All you have to do is make it clear throughout the girl child's life that you really love her and care about her and want the very best for her. If she knows that, then she'll grow up and she will form healthy attachments when she grows up. Now, with regard to males, again, mothers are terribly, terribly important, but males learn their ideas of how to treat women by looking at the way their father treats their mother. So they say the greatest thing that you can do for your children is to love their mother. The greatest thing for your children overall is to love your husband or your wife, love your spouse. Because children grow up just watching and absorbing the relationship between the two of you through the skin. And what they do is they form what is called a template within their brain. Is this is the way adult relationships are supposed to be. They're supposed to be mature and loving and respectful. So they'll go through their ups and downs when they grow up and meet members of the opposite sex. This is part of the learning experience, but they will never lose sight, like a guided missile, they will never lose sight of the way it's supposed to be. And they will end up in stable relationships, which will very much reflect the relationship between their mother and father, because that's their model of the way a relationship is supposed to be. So the sixth goal that we have is to raise children with good health habits. Now, this is terribly important. You know, 95% of everything that you do or don't do is determined by your habits. You either have good habits or you have poor habits. And your habits are learned as you're growing up, and they're often taught to you by the most important people in your life. Miss Manners was once asked in one of her columns, how long does it take to teach a child table manners? Which, as you know, are a critical habit that we fight with all of our lives. And she wrote back and she said, about 15 years of hard work, aggravation, frustration, and stress, if you're lucky. And I heard that and I thought, isn't that amazing? Because that's exactly the case. You've been telling your children ever since they were old enough to hold a knife or fork, not to talk with their mouth full, to put a napkin on their lap, not to eat with their hands, and so on. And still they're 11 and 12 and 13, and they're still eating like that. And you think, my God, I must be a terrible parent. I must be missing the boat. No, it's okay. That's the going time. It takes about 15 years of repetition. And then you know what happens? It suddenly clicks. And I've seen this with my children. They fight you and they argue with you and they tell you it's not important. And you say, yes, but what if you get invited to dine with the president or the queen? Yes, but I never will, so it doesn't matter. And you know what the most amazing thing happens? As soon as they get out of your sight and they go over to their friend's house, they eat with the manners that you taught them. They come home and they eat like little pigs sometimes, but at a certain point, they suddenly click. And from that point onwards, they eat well. So just be patient. And this is some of the habits. Now, some of the health habits, of course, are to eat in moderation, to eat your vegetables. One of the things that we were taught as children is to clean your plate. And this we've learned now with our children is it's not a great idea. Because if you're taught to clean your plate, what will happen is you'll start to feel guilty if you don't eat everything that's put in front of you. And sometimes what's put in front of you is too much, or maybe you've put too much there. So telling children to eat until they're satisfied, they're no longer hungry, is a good habit for children to develop. My wife and I both came from poor households. We grew up, and so now when we go out for dinner to a restaurant, we'll sit there and we'll have more than we can eat. And she'll say, oh my, look at this, I can't eat all this. And I'll say, honey, it's okay. We're not poor anymore. It's okay. We don't have to eat it. We all laugh at that. But sometimes I share that with my audience. Sometimes when you go out for dinner, you don't have to eat it. You're not poor anymore. You don't have to clean your plate. And cleaning your plate, by the way, often leads to overeating, it leads to a whole bunch of other things. So be aware of that. And finally, the last goal that we have is to raise children who are strong and mature and respected by others. It is to raise children who become leaders. And this is one of the goals of this talk. There's lots of followers out there. We want to raise children who are leaders. We want to raise children who are men and women, who rise to positions of responsibility, who are looked up to by others, who are given important assignments, and who become leaders later on in life. And we can do that by doing certain things. Well, let me talk about my own story. I sometimes joke with my audience. I say I come by my feelings of guilt and unworthiness honestly because I was raised by a Roman Catholic mother. Well, there's a lot of negative influences in life, and as it happens, your parents will usually raise you the same way they were raised. If they were raised with a lot of destructive criticism and physical punishment and blaming and guilt and complaining and so on, then that's the way they'll raise you. Now, here's the interesting thing. You've heard the old saying, oh my God, I've become my mother, or I've become like my father. Well, that's very normal. When you're growing up and your parents do things to you which you find unacceptable and unfair and hurtful, you resolve that, by gum, when I grow up, I sure won't do this to my children. And then, you know what happens? Is you have a child, and then you slip right back into doing what your parents do. It's the most amazing darn thing. So if you don't grab the steering wheel of your parental life and jerk it to one side or the other, you will end up duplicating the same child-raising behaviors that were practiced on you when you were growing up. Well, when I was growing up, I basically had every mistake made. When I was 15 years old, I'd been in trouble in school, I'd been expelled, I'd been suspended, I got in trouble with the law, I was one of the most unpopular kids in school, I was kicked out of Boy Scouts, I was kicked out of church groups, I was basically a loner. And my mother went to visit a child psychologist. And she explained to the child psychologist how she had raised me, what her attitude had been, what her behavior had been, what her treatment had been, how my father had treated me as well. And the child psychologist put his stuff down. She told me this much later. Put the stuff down and said, you know, I've never heard of a parent who has done so many things wrong. I said, I don't even have any kind of encouragement or advice to give you. You've made every mistake that it's possible to make on a firstborn child. He said, if Brian survives your upbringing, it will be in spite of you, not because of you. The only thing you can do is hope that he will basically set a course and he will be able to rise above what you've put him through for 15 years. And up until this time, my mother had this idea that she was always right. My father was twice as right as my mother. And everything that I had ever done was 100% solely my own fault. And in reality, in looking back, I was doing what they call acting out. I was trying to get even. I was trying to get viciously even with my parents. I was just lashing out at the world. And fortunately, at a certain point, I met older men, and I mean that in a very positive sense, Boy Scout leaders, YMCA leaders, men that I met that helped me with my lawnmowers and eventually my cars, mechanics, working guys with big hands. And they befriended me. They saw something in me. I remember four or five of them over the course of my late teens saw something in me and treated me with respect and kindness, and it changed my whole life. You can never tell, by the way, when one word of kindness from you will have an enormous impact on others. I was at a seminar in Cleveland just the other day, and someone came up to me and said, you know, I was going through a terrible time in my life, and I wrote you a letter. I got a tape of yours, and I got your address, and I wrote you a letter. And you wrote back to me, and you told me that I could do anything I put my mind to. And you know something? You're the only important person that's ever written to me in my life. I still have that letter. I still read it. I can do anything I put my mind to. And you know, I'm successful today. I'm making a great living. I've got a wonderful marriage. I've got two great children. I mean, just a transformed person by one simple little gesture from yourself. And you never know when that's going to be. So, coming back to parents, my friend Wayne Dyer said many years ago, he said, you know, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. It's never too late to have a happy childhood. And I thought, oh my, that's an interesting point. Well, how do you have a happy childhood if you had a lousy childhood? Well, the answer is you go back and you reinterpret everything that happened as good. And you say, isn't it wonderful that my parents were so unfair, unkind, unjust, cruel, unreasonable, and so on when I was growing up? Because it brought me up with character and perspective and awareness of what is right and what is wrong, and it gave me the tools that I need to be a good parent myself. So I look back on my childhood, and I reconciled with my parents long before they died, and I love them and respect them and wish them well. I thank them from the bottom of my heart that they got me here and that they gave me a chance at this great life. But more than anything else, they taught me all the things not to do with my kids. And very deliberately, I began to slip into it, and I began to slip out of it and realize, whoa, I am not going to become my parents. So I have done the opposite of what my parents did with my children. And the most remarkable thing is, my children have turned out like flowers under the influence of sunshine and water. They just bloomed. And your children will bloom as well as we go on talking. I have four children now. My oldest daughter, Christina, is 24. My son, Michael, is 21. My son, David, is 17. And my youngest daughter, Catherine, is 11. I've read all kinds of books and magazines and courses, and I spent my whole life trying to be a good parent to them. So here's some of the things that we need to talk about. First of all, the challenges of parenting today versus yesterday are absolutely incredible. It used to be that life moved much more slowly, that parents had a much greater influence in the lives of their children. In fact, there's some research coming in now, it's very controversial, that said what parents do or don't do really makes no difference at all in how the children turn out. Now, that's an extreme, but the point she makes is very interesting. She said the influence of your children's peers and their reference group and their teachers and their school when they're away from you is going to have much more of an impact on them than you are. Now, parents always ask me, what can I do to offset the fact that I'm working during the day? I don't get home till 6 o'clock at night. I don't spend a lot of time with my kids, even though I want to, because I'm tired and because I've got work to do and so on. Well, here's what you do. You must become the greatest single source of love, encouragement, and unconditional positive regard and reinforcement for your child. Your child is love tropic. Children come into the world and they respond to the people who love them the most. Just like moths to the flame or flowers move toward the sunshine, your children are most influenced by the people who love them the most unconditionally. So if you want to have an inordinate impact on your children, especially when they grow up and the influences of their peers are incredible, you become the primary source of love and respect in their life. That way, when you ask them to do something that is inconsistent or contrary to what their peers are encouraging them to do, because they love and respect you so much, you will be the influence that has the greatest effect on them. So one of the things that you do and one of the challenges you have as a parent is your time priorities are often not clear. Your time priorities aren't clear in that you have so much to do and so little time. So when I teach my parents and my audiences how to balance their lives, I say when you are a parent and you're in the child raising family formation stage of your life, is do just two things, work and family. Instead of trying to do work and 1,000 other little things and giving whatever dregs of your time are left to your family, do work and family and satisfy your requirements in those areas and only then do everything else. You know, one of the funniest things you'll hear people say in our society is, we're going to have children, but it's not going to have any effect on our lifestyle. Isn't that great? We're going to have children, but it won't have any effect on our lifestyle. You idiot. When you have a child, your lifestyle changes forever. The day that child is born, your whole life is different, and it's different in a very positive way. Suddenly, things that seemed important aren't important. And one of the things you have to do is you have to very quickly abandon a lot of time-consuming things. I've known people who are playing golf 5 days a week, living in the southern parts of the United States, playing golf 5 days a week, have their first child try to play golf 5 days a week, and create a complete disaster at home until they realize when you have a child, you have to focus on that child. And raising children takes an enormous amount of time. Interesting thing, you know, you can be very busy and social and married and without a children, and you can be busy and going to parties and so on. But the instant you have a child, it's almost like you go into a 20-year time warp. If suddenly all of your priorities change, suddenly all of your attention seems to turn inward towards your family and your child. And you want to get home at night and see how the child is doing. And you get up and the child is there and you plan things around your child. And all the old friends that you have that don't have any children, they kind of drift away like cigarette smoke. And you wonder, am I becoming antisocial? No, you're not antisocial. You're normal. That's what happens. Is raising a family is a full-time thing and in a very, very positive way. The greatest joys in life come from the joys you experience with your family. So just do two things, family and work, until you master them all. Well, here are some behaviors of effective parents. Now, one of the behaviors is a strong emphasis on the happiness and well-being of their children. It's absolutely clear to their children that their parents really, really care about them a lot. There's no question at all that the child is a valuable and important member of the family. The parents talk to them, they think about them, they listen to them, they hold them, they do all kinds of things. So the child feels that he or she is engulfed in a sea of warmth and love and security. This is the culture medium that children need to grow happy, healthy, confident personalities. The absolute knowing that they are completely safe. You know, the Maslow's hierarchy of values starts off at the very bottom is survival. But survival is not just physical, it's emotional survival. And children have an incredible need for love and touching during the formative years. You cannot love and touch a child too much when they're in their infant years. As they get a little bit older, they won't need it as much, but when they're young, you can't give them too much. It's almost like mainlining love to their brain. And when the child is always held and loved and petted and hugged and kissed and everything else, the child grows up feeling, boy, I'm important. Boy, I'm valuable, and especially I'm safe emotionally, if not physically and everything else. By the way, sometimes the reason children cry at night, especially when they're young, is they're crying out for reassurance just to know that there's somebody there. That's why if they cry for too long, as opposed to just squeaking and peeping as they sometimes do, go and pick them up, hold them, walk around with them, rock them, talk to them. It just confirms to them at a subconscious level that they're safe. Now, the next level, of course, is security. And security means emotional security, physical security, warmth, food, especially when they're hungry, changing their diapers when they're wet and things like that. And then it moves up to belongingness. The next need is that they know that they belong to something bigger than themselves. Every human being has a deep need to belong to something bigger than themselves. And the first thing we belong to as a child is we belong to a family. We belong to something bigger than us, broader than us, those great giants in the world out there. And then, of course, it goes up into self-esteem. The next need is self-esteem, and that's to feel valuable and important, which comes from the way that parents treat a child. And we'll talk about that as we go along. Well, with regard to effective parents, they are very clear about their values and about their behaviors and about what is acceptable. You know, there's two types of parents. There are parents who are firm and clear about their values, and they're what are called laissez-faire parents. These go back to the Benjamin Spock generation. These are parents, I'll let the child do what they want, let the child cry, let the child do this, let the child have that. No, good parents create clear boundaries. What we have found is that children who are raised with clear boundaries, what they can do and what they can't do, what is acceptable and unacceptable, are children who are much healthier, much happier, and much more confident than children who are allowed to do their own thing. There is a time when you start to set your children free, but it's certainly not when they're young. When they're young, they need to know what their boundaries are. And what they do is they're always testing their boundaries. They're always pushing the boundaries because they need you to tell them what they are. And as soon as they know, they're happy. Many years ago, I worked on a ranch. And we used to feed cattle that came in from Texas, and they'd be fattened up before they were sent into Los Angeles for the supermarkets. They'd unload the cattle from the railroad car into the pasture. The very first thing the cattle would do is they'd walk in a row all the way around the fence. They'd walk on the inside of the fence all the way around looking for an opening in the fence. Once they were clear that there was no opening in the fence, only then would they then disperse and begin to graze. Children are the same way. They're always looking for an opening in your fence. And so the greater clarity you have with regard to what is right and wrong behavior and what is acceptable and not acceptable, without being rigid or destructively critical, the happier and healthier your children will be. One of the behaviors of effective parents is that they're both fun and flexible. They're open and they're responsive, especially to their children's opinions. One of the things my parents never did with me is they never treated me like I had a brain. They treated me like a pet. And by that, I meant they ignored any of my opinions. They never asked me anything. They told me what to do. The first time my parents ever asked me my opinion, I think I was 14 years old, and I almost fell down. I was absolutely flabbergasted because it was such a remarkable thing. So when my children came along, I asked them their opinion at the first age that they can speak. At a very early age, I say, what would you like to do? What would you like to do now? What would you like to do? Now, that doesn't mean you listen to their opinion, or it doesn't mean that you adhere to their opinion, but you always invite their opinion. And if you're going to go out, you say, would you like to go to McDonald's, or would you like to go here or there? You ask them for their opinion, and you listen to their opinion, and then you discuss their opinion, and they learn that sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. Sometimes their opinion is acceptable to the majority, sometimes it's not. But it makes them grow up feeling that their opinion carries weight. Now my children are growing up, and when they talk to adults, when they talk to their teachers, they expect their opinion to be respected. They're very respectful, they're very polite, but you can't put them off because they've been taught from the earliest age that their thinking is valuable. Why? Because the most important people in their world taught them that their thinking was valuable. Now, here's another behavior of effective parents that, again, comes from all the best research, is effective parents have positive expectations of their children. They expect their children to do well, and they express this in word and deed. Because they're always telling their children that, I know you'll do well. I know you'll do well at this. I'm sure you'll do well at that. I'm sure you'll get a good grade. Or you'll do very well in this competition. And no matter how they do, parents say, that was good. That was really good. You're making a lot of progress. My little daughter, Catherine, is riding horses now. And she just got into a big show with her new horse. And she was out against 22 other little girls who come from some of the best families with best horses and huge amounts of money and so on. And the first day she went out and competed, she didn't win a single ribbon. They have ribbons 1 through 8. 22 girls, she didn't win a single ribbon. And she said to me, you know, I didn't win any ribbons. I said, that's all right. You never win any ribbons when you start off. What you do is you win ribbons later. You learn how to do it. You get so on. She said, really? I said, yeah, don't worry about it. Second day she went out, she won 2 ribbons, a 6th and a 7th. And that's not going to win the Olympics. But I said, you see, that's how it works. Do you know what happens to her? She walks around and she is so happy. She's so proud of herself. No matter what happens to her in the future now, she knows that sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. And then when you lose, that means you're going to win. And so her parents, she knows, always expect the best of her. And never criticize her, never disappointed, always expect them to do well. If your children get a good grade, you say, oh, that's a great grade. If they get a poor grade, you say, you know, you could do better than that. You're a smart person. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to get a better grade than that, do you? Probably if you worked a little bit harder, you could bring that up, couldn't you? Yes, I could. Well, okay, give it your best shot next time. And you don't make a thing of it. You don't beat them up for it. Here's one of the rules. One of the great rules of life is never criticize your child for something they can't change. Never criticize a child for something they can't change. Now, all past events are things they can't change. You never criticize a child for making a mistake, for dropping the ball, for getting into trouble. And by the way, if you're a good parent, you're going to have good kids. If you have good kids, they're going to get into stuff. Why? Because kids who have self-confidence and self-esteem and have energy, they're going to get into stuff. Boys get into lots of stuff. Girls get into different stuff. But everybody gets into stuff. So what you have to ask yourself is, would you like your child to come home each night and sit there in a chair and look at a stick until dinner time? We read this when we were young parents. Would you like your child to come home and sit and look at a stick all day? Or would you like your child to get out there and get into stuff? Well, they're going to get into stuff, and they're going to make mistakes. They're going to drop the ball, and they're going to break things. They're going to get into trouble at school and with the neighbors. And you know what? So did you. So did I. And you and I probably did it worse than they did. So what you do, and I say this with my kids, I say, well, you got into trouble. Yeah, all right, tell me what happened. They always tell me what happened. I say, well, what did you learn? Well, I learned this. Next time this happens, I'm not going to do that. I say, well, that's a good lesson. You know, I had this happen to me once, and you know one of the things I learned? And you talk about it as though it happened to a neighbor child. You happen to talk to somebody else, and you just throw it off. But you never criticize your children for something they can't change. Because if you criticize a child for something that happened in the past, it makes them frustrated, it makes them defensive, it makes them angry. They can't do anything about it. So what you do is you say, all right, what did we learn from this experience? And especially these words. What are you going to do next time? What are you going to do the next time this happens? And force your kids to think about what they're going to do next time, and you'll be absolutely amazed at how positive they are, how smart they are, how much smarter they become, how they help their friends evaluate, they evaluate themselves, and so on. Now, my growing kids come to me and say, you know, I really made a mistake here, and I did this or that, but I'll tell you what I learned, and they go straight into the lesson. I don't even have to ask them anymore. They have now become self-organizing organisms. They learn themselves. It's just a wonderful thing. Now, another behavior of effective parents is they practice what is called unconditional positive regard. What does that mean? That means that they love their children unconditionally. You see, children come into the world with no fears at all, except the fears of loud noises and the fears of falling. The two fears that they learn are the fears of failure, when parents tell them, no, get away from there, stop that, put that down, or spank their hands, which leads, by the way, to the feelings of, I can't, I can't, I can't. And the other negative habit pattern they develop is the compulsive, which is when their parents withdraw love from them in order to try to get them to behave in a certain way. So then they say, you better, or else. If you don't, you're going to get into trouble. What did you do now? And what parents do is they make the mistake of giving and withholding love. They hold out the love and they pull it back in order to try to manipulate the child's behavior. So what I decided to do, this is what that guy went through for 15, 16 years, is I'm going to give my children 100% unconditional love. And I'm not just going to think it and feel it, I'm going to tell them. So I told them from the time they were infants, I love you 100%, 100% of the time. I will never love you anything less than 100%. I will never love you 99%. It's always 100%. Now, that doesn't mean we won't argue and we won't disagree, but by gum, I love you 100%. And every so often, I ask my children, how much do I love you? And they say 100%. And now that they're grown up, I ask them, you know, do you ever doubt how much I love you? And absolutely not. You love us 100%, no matter what you say or no matter what we do. And that has a wonderful impact on children's psyche, that their parents love them 100%. So avoid criticizing your children. Avoid getting angry with them. Avoid attacking them for failures or mistakes that happened in the past. Refuse to throw guilt at them. Refuse to blame them for anything. Refuse to reject them. When I see a television movie, it happens on television where people say, I'm disowning my daughter or I've been disowned by my parents, you make it clear there's nothing your children can do in the entire world that would ever cause you to love them less than 100%. And the final behavior of effective parents, by the way, is no physical punishment. When I was growing up, I was whipped and strapped and slapped and kicked all the time. And when I grew up, for my first couple of children, I would pat them on the bum. The only place I ever patted them was either on the bottom or the hand if they were touching something that was dangerous for them. But you know what? Once I asked my kids, is there anything that I do that you'd like me to stop doing? And my two younger children, or who were my older children at that time, said, we'd like you to stop spanking us. And I said, well, if I stop spanking you, what will happen? They said, well, we're not going to do it anyway. We just hate being spanked. And I said, okay, I'll never spank you again. And I never did. And none of my last two children, my youngest, have ever been spanked. And you know what? They turned out great. You know, sometimes they stand in the corner, sometimes they get sent to their bedroom and so on, but you never spank them. Whenever I have to come down on them, I say, you know, I love you very much, but you mustn't do this. I love you very much, but you've got to stop doing that. I love you very much, but you mustn't poke your little sister. I love you very much, but you mustn't run around with that because you could get hurt. I always precede a set of instructions with, I love you very much, but, and so it's really important. Okay, what is the role of a family philosophy? One of the most important things you do for your family is basically you set up a mission statement for your family. You decide in advance what your family mission statement is going to be. And I'll give you mine, and this is pretty consistent with that of most happy families. They say that our mission for our family is to create an environment where each child feels free to realize his or her potential within a climate of love, appreciation, respect, and safety. Your job is to raise your children so they grow up strong and happy and healthy and with great senses of humor. Your job is to create an environment like a cocoon within which your children feel fabulous about themselves. The greatest thing you'll ever hear, by the way, is when your child says to you, you know, I sure love being a member of this family. My kids say that to me now, and when they're growing up, they don't appreciate it. But then they start to compare this family with their peers and how much love and respect and unconditional regard they get. And they say, boy, I love being a member of this family. I love being a member of this family. So one of the most important things you do in a family philosophy is you cultivate values. And the two most important values that I've learned for raising children are the values of truthfulness and responsibility. They did a study in USA Today, and they asked thousands of parents in every socioeconomic grouping from the poorest to the richest, what do you want for your children? And you know what they came back with? They said, I want my children to practice self-responsibility and self-control, and I want my children to get good grades in school. Because they felt that those two would be more important in assuring success in life than anything else. So self-responsibility means that you encourage your children to say, I am responsible. So now my children, whenever they do something, they come and they say, Dad, I did this, but I am responsible, and this is what I learned. Or I got into this, but I am responsible. And whenever I can, whenever my children, from the time they're 4 or 5, I say, okay, you're the leader, you take care of this. Or you be responsible, you do this for me. And so what I do is I keep giving them what is called age-relevant responsibilities or age-appropriate responsibilities. I keep asking them to do things. You do this, you're responsible. You're in charge. I'll make you responsible for this. And it's absolutely amazing. If you want to grow children with strong character who become leaders with wisdom and tenacity and purpose and high levels of self-confidence and self-esteem, give them lots of responsibility. Give them age-appropriate responsibility. Make sure that you're standing right there just in case they fall, but always give them more responsibility. And the more responsibility you give them, the better you'll bring them up. The other value that you raise your children with is truthfulness, is encourage them to always tell the truth. When my children were growing up, I remember Michael was about 7, and I asked him, Michael, what about this and what about that? And he gave me an answer. I said, Michael, that is a barefaced lie. How could you say that? He said, I just thought I'd give it a shot. And I thought, darn. And then I realized that children lie in a way of testing different communication styles. Now, what does that mean? It means that they're not evil. They're not bad when they lie. Just lying is what children do, is they try it on for size. Give it a shot. See if it works. If lying works, and children are very expedient, if lying works, they lie more, and they lie better, and they lie more often, and they lie more cleverly. So when I realized that, about the same time I read a little line that just had a shattering effect on Barbara and I, and it said this. It said, if your children lie to you, who has made them afraid to tell the truth? Oh, geez. So I sat my 2 older children down. My 2 younger were too small. I said, from now on, we want you always to tell us the truth. Always tell us the truth, no matter what happens, and I promise you, you'll never get into trouble for telling the truth. You'll get into big trouble for telling lies, but you'll never get into trouble for telling the truth. So, as children are, they tried us on with a couple of little truths and to see how we reacted, and we reacted well. So they tried us on with a couple more and a couple more, and within a few months, we had trained them. They always told the truth. And today, all my children tell the truth. And it's the most remarkable thing. I can ask them anything, and they'll always tell the truth. Here's something that I used to do. They'd say, will you take me to McDonald's? I said, I'll take you to McDonald's as soon as I get this finished. You say, well, is that a promise? I said, yes, that's a promise. That's a daddy promise. A daddy promise. Because I wanted them to understand that there were certain things. I'll take you to McDonald's if I have time. I'll take you to the movie if it's okay. But when I gave them a daddy promise, they knew that they could take that to the bank. And so they'd say, after a while, is that a daddy promise? I say, no, that's not a daddy promise. I'll do my best here, but I can't promise you. Or I say, yes, that's a daddy promise. As soon as they heard it was a daddy promise, they light up and they walk away because they knew it was a slam dunk. Then, when they got a little bit older, I'd say, Christina, is that a Christina promise? And she would start like a rabbit, and she would say, yes, that's a Christina promise. That's a Michael promise. That's a David promise. That's a Catherine promise. They would give me promises and attach their names to it. And I'd say, okay, great. And then now, they don't have to do that. I just say, honey, is that the truth? They say, yes. I say, good. That's the truth. I say, I know you always tell the truth. And they always do. And now my kids said to me recently, we're having family dinner together. So one of the most important things you do is to have family dinner as often as you possibly can and leave the television and radio off when you're having family dinner. Make it a rule, never have the television on when the family is eating together. I cannot tell you how important this is, because if the television is off, a vacuum is created. And when the vacuum is created, what happens is everybody talks to each other. And as they're eating, because it releases endorphins in their brain, they warm up and they become more personable. And they talk and they exchange and they share what's going on in their lives. And you'll learn more at a family dinner table with no television on than you could possibly imagine. Many people will grow up and for the rest of their lives, they'll remember the joy of the family dinner table. And at the family dinner table, never talk about your work or business. Kids absolutely hate it. Never criticize your children. Never get angry with them. At the family dinner table, you make that one of the most enjoyable places of your life. You always talk and exchange, and especially you ask them how they're doing. How was their day? What was the best thing that happened to you today? What did you learn today? What's going on in your life? Encourage your children to kind of lead the conversation at the family dinner table. Well, anyway, so we taught them truthfulness, and now what they do is they always tell the truth. And they were sitting at the family dinner table, and they say, you know, we love being in this family because we can always tell our parents the truth. And I said, well, is that unusual? They say, oh, you bet. None of our friends can tell their parents the truth. He said, I was out yesterday, and my friend said, just tell your parents this. And I said, I never lie to my parents. And he said, everybody lies to their parents. He said, I never lie to my parents. He said, and as I said that, I suddenly saw myself, and I realized I don't lie to my parents. It was the most remarkable thing. I don't lie to my parents. We are so happy we never have to lie to our parents. The most wonderful thing that you can give your children, and if you raise your children so that they are honest and they have a reputation for honesty, our children are so respected by their friends for honesty, and if they accept responsibility, those two qualities will raise them as leaders. Those will make them great people. But here's the most wonderful thing. Every single time a child is honest, their self-esteem goes up. Their sense of personal value increases. Their sense of self-confidence increases. They feel stronger about themselves. When they accept responsibility, they become leaders. So when you encourage them, I just say truthfulness and responsibility. Tell the truth, accept responsibility, and never, ever punish them for telling the truth or accepting responsibility. It's the most amazing thing. Now, I could give only two things to any parent. Those are the two greatest gifts I've given to my children. And they have grown up, and they're so confident, and they're so positive. Anyway, give it a shot. All right. So remember this. Your children lie. Who has made them afraid to tell the truth? And your job is to make them so there's no fear in telling the truth. Okay, well, how do you raise responsible children with self-mastery, self-control, self-discipline? There's only one way, and that is to be a role model yourself. Children observe their parents and ignore anything their parents say. They watch their parents hundreds and thousands of times, and children absorb like a sponge. They absorb their parents' behaviors through the skin. They'll often, as adults, have the same speaking manner, the same joking manner, the same behaviors, but they watch their parents. And here's an interesting thing that they have found, is that mothers play an inordinately important role in teaching a child whether or not they live in an orderly world. And what they have found is that children look at the mother to see if by the mother's behavior and attitude, this world makes sense. So, if a mother seems to be well organized and calm and controlled with regard to her life and her family and her work, then the children think this is the way the world is. And that's the way they see the world, and that's the order they impose on their world. If their mother is harried or upset or angry or flustered or seems overwhelmed, children start to feel nervous, tense, and feel overwhelmed and anxious and insecure themselves. So the mother here seems to have more of an effect on children's ideas about whether or not it's an orderly world than the fathers do. But nonetheless, both of them have an impact. So the children are watching like windshield wipers, watching the mother, the father, the mother, the father, to get an idea of responsibility. So when they hear the parents say, I am responsible, or I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that, or I made a mistake, or I was wrong. One of the things that I learned from my father, God bless him, is my father was never wrong about anything. And probably, in truth, he was never right about anything. He made more mistakes and caused more disasters for our family. I mean, we were still struggling financially 25 years after he and my mother had gotten married. We had four children. He just made every mistake in the book. He and my mother had two inheritances while I was growing up, and we were dirt poor. We had no money. I had to earn my own living from the age of 10 by mowing lawns and chopping weeds and delivering papers around the neighborhood. Never got a penny from my parents because they didn't have a penny to give me. And my parents had two inheritances, and they blew them both. They blew them both. They just went through them like water. And you know the old joke about my parents went to Disney and all I got was a crummy T-shirt? My parents went through two complete inheritances, one from one side of the family, one from the other, and you know what? All I got was a lousy T-shirt. I still remember. And they thought I should be really appreciative of that. So one of the most wonderful things you can say to your children is, you know, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I was wrong. And go and tell them. I'm not perfect, and I, especially if ever you shout at your children, if ever you get angry at your children or blow up, this has an incredibly destructive effect on your children. Immediately go, and imagine you've put a huge 100-pound weight on your child's emotional back. You immediately go and say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have shouted at you. I know you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have stuck a stick in your brother's or sister's eye and so on, but I shouldn't have blown up at you. I'm the adult. So go and say, I'm sorry. By the way, sit down so you're at their eye level. If you have little children, sit down on the floor so that you're eye to eye with them, so that you can talk to them honestly, and just slow down. Just ask questions. Just kind of hang with your kids. You know, there's a law with regard to time management that says that it's quality of time at work that counts and quantity of time at home. And quality of time at work means that you work on your most important result, the most valuable use of your time at your work. But relationships cannot be satisfied with so-called quality time. You cannot have efficient relationships with other human beings. You have to have and allow for quantities of time with the most important people in your world. It's quantities of time that make all the difference, because the great moments in your relationships come unbidden. They come unexpected. You cannot say, okay, let's have some great moments. Those great moments only come when you leave lots of easy, relaxed time. One of your jobs is to create big chunks of time, 30, 60, 90 minutes. Take your children for drives and never listen to the radio when you're driving with your child. When you're driving with your child, ask them questions and just listen. Take your children to movies. Take them for walks or to the park. Go on family vacations. And on family vacations, leave things off. Leave the television off. Leave the music off. Get out. Walk around. Go out and eat somewhere and have dinner. And just ask them questions and listen. Create large chunks of time so you can just hang and connect with your children. Well, you want your children to eat the right foods? One of the most important things you do is feed them the right foods. One of the things we found is that kids drink a lot of soft drinks. You know what we did? Is we stopped having them at home. We don't buy them. We don't stock them. We don't store them. Instead, we buy huge amounts of water. And you know what? Our kids drink water most of the time. If we do buy soft drinks, we buy soft drinks that are either diet soft drinks or soft drinks that have very little or no sugar in them. We don't have any candy around. We found an interesting thing. Kids that eat candy almost poison themselves. And around Halloween, when they had a whole bunch of candy, the kids were eating candy like crazy. So what we did is we just stopped bringing candy home. And the Halloween candy was soon given to some other kids, given away. So we just don't have candy. We don't buy cakes and we don't buy desserts. Not unreasonably, but we just don't tempt our children. We encourage them to eat more fruits and vegetables. You can't beat them over the head with it, but here's the key. Your children's success at school is going to be determined by the kind of nutrition they get at home. The most important thing you can teach them, like your mother said, was to eat a good breakfast. Eat a high-protein breakfast with orange juice, eggs, cereal. Eat a high-protein lunch with good sandwiches and good food, and eat good foods for dinner. Again, as I said before, try to sit with your family to have dinners as much as you possibly can. Now, with regard to your child's world of work, which is school, it's going to be the last thing we're going to be able to touch on today, is helping your children to do well at school is very simple. It's be interested in their schoolwork. They've studied 8,000 schools and hundreds of thousands, millions of students to find out what are the great predictors of scholastic success. And you know, number one is the parents' attitude toward their schoolwork. Is parents encourage their children to do their schoolwork? Parents encourage their children to do their homework. Parents ask about their homework and make sure it's done. If the school reports that homework isn't being done on time, they sit down with the child and they tell them how important it is that they do their schoolwork before anything else. They set up reward structures. One of the things that we do if our children are having difficulties is we get them tutoring. Your child goes to work every day on schedule. Your child has projects to complete. Your child has coworkers, and your child has bosses or a boss, the teacher. The most important things that you do is to take an interest in your children's schoolwork. If your children love you and you constantly emphasize and reemphasize to them how important their schoolwork is, eventually they come to think it's important as well. If you constantly praise them and encourage them when they do well, when you go to school functions and meet with their teachers, when you attend school plays and school games, when you take a real genuine interest in the work life of your children, they'll take a genuine interest in it as well. Give them rewards for getting good grades. Give them encouragement when they increase their grades. If they get poor grades, help them to set standards to raise their grade level by 1 point in the following year. Here's another thing is I always tell my children how smart they are. I always tell them how creative they are. if they get a poor grade, I say, geez, you're much smarter than that. You can do better than that next time. And I just make a light thing of it. And they say, I will. I say, I want you to promise me that you'll really get a better grade next time. And they say, okay, Dad, I promise. I said, is that a Michael promise? That's a Michael promise. Great. Well, I'm not going to worry about it because I got poor grades when I was growing up as well. So you make a light thing of it, but you encourage them and you praise them and you're supportive and you back them up and you get them help and you get them tutoring. You help them in any way you possibly can. So let me wrap up now with what I call the 21 key ways to love your child. And I just whip through this quickly. Number one, tell them how important they are all the time. Number two, praise them regularly. Praise them often. Praise them for anything. It's big or small. That raises their self-esteem more than anything else. Number three, accept and love them unconditionally. Refuse to be judgmental or critical. Smile at them whenever you see them. Teach them so that you're so glad to see them. Every time you walk in, you should brighten up like a Christmas tree. Number four, tell them how proud you are of them for everything that they do. Children love to be told how proud their parents are of them. Number five, get down to their level physically when you relate to them. Sit down at a low level, at eye level. Get down onto the floor with them. Get down to their level. Hunker down, if you like, and, you know, be cool. Number six, appreciate them and thank them for everything they do. There's nothing like the words thank you to make a child feel valuable and important. Repeat it over and over. Number seven, never criticize them for something that can't be changed, which means don't criticize them for past events. If they make a mistake, discuss it, decide what they've learned, and then let it go and never bring it up again. Number eight, never complain or try to make them feel guilty for not pleasing you in some way. Remember, you're the parent. The child's job is not to please you. The child's job is to realize his or her potential. Number nine, pay close attention to them when they talk or express their opinions. Listen to them closely, like they were your boss at work. And when you listen to children closely, they feel valuable and important, and it has an effect on their whole lives. Number 10, admire them for their accomplishments, large and small. Whenever they accomplish anything, they'll say, boy, that's really great. Number 11, compliment them for every achievement. Everybody loves a compliment, and it really raises self-esteem. Number 12, tell them that you love them all the time. You cannot tell a child too much, too often, that you love them. And by the way, you can practice that with your spouse as well. Number 13, always expect the best. Always believe in them. Always tell them, I have complete confidence in you. I expect you to do well. Number 14, put everything aside when they have a need or when they want to talk to you. Turn off the television. Shut your newspaper. Close the book. Put everything apart and listen to them single-mindedly like they're the most important people in the world. Number 15, never use your adult power to force them or make them do things. Rather than that, discuss and get agreement. Don't use your power, you do this my way or you're going to be in trouble. All that does is it makes them angry, it makes them bide their time to get even. Instead, talk to them as equals, discuss, negotiate, and agree. Tell them what you want them to do. Tell them what you feel is best and why. Next, number 16, talk to them as though they are mature, intelligent people, even when they're infants. Even when they're children, never use baby talk. Always use straight, honest talk. And they'll grow up and that's the way they'll talk to you. Number 17, ask for their opinions on matters that affect them. Ask for their opinions about their school, about where we go for dinner, about what we do in our Christmas vacation, about how we spend our time. Always ask for their input so that they'll know that their inputs are important. Number 18, tell them about your work, what you do, and ask for their insights and ideas. What do you think about this, and what do you think about that, and I've got this problem at work. How would you handle it? Sometimes kids will come up with ideas that'll just knock you out of your socks. They're so good. Number 19, bring them small gifts and leave them little notes whenever you can. Number 20, make it clear that you love them 100%, 100% of the time. And number 21 is treat your spouse with love and respect in their presence. The kindest thing you can do for your children is to love your husband or love your wife in their presence. That will do more for them to grow up strong and confident and able to form long-lasting, happy relationships and raise great children like you're raising great children as well.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.